Welcome to David Maister's Business Masterclass, a series of advanced business seminars exploring principles and practices for success in professional businesses.
Hello, I'm David Maister. This is Earning Trust, the ninth episode in my podcast series on careers. In the last podcast, I talked about developing friendship skills and behaviors. Now we're going to talk about winning people's trust. No matter what business you are in, your future success will depend upon whether or not people will trust you. In the early years of your career, it will be about whether your manager or supervisor trusts you enough to give you responsibility for interesting, challenging tasks. Later, your career success will turn on whether you can get colleagues inside or outside your department to trust you and collaborate with you. You'll then have to learn eventually how to earn the trust of those who work for you when you become a manager. And finally, you will probably need to learn how to earn and deserve a client's trust or a customer's trust. To see how the success of business careers depends upon trust, consider the situation when you have to hire someone. Whether you are hiring someone to look after your legal affairs, your taxes, your child, or your car, the act of hiring someone requires you to put your affairs in someone else's hands. You're forced into an act of faith, and you can only hope that they'll deal with you appropriately. That's what it's going to feel like when anyone hires you or gives you some responsibility. You can try to research someone's background and check their technical skills and attempt to examine their past performance. But in spite of all of this, when the final decision comes on who to give work to, you must ultimately decide to trust someone with your baby, which is never a comfortable thing to do. What you want, and what anyone who ever hires you is going to want, is someone who understands your interests and will not put their interests ahead of yours while working for you. You want somebody who you can trust to do the right thing. You want somebody who will care, and so does everyone else who will work with you. Making progress in a career is about earning and deserving that trust. Imagine what it feels like for a boss or a supervisor to have to choose you or somebody else for an important assignment. Just like you hiring someone, they're putting their future and their reputation in the hands of a subordinate. Getting great assignments from above turns on whether you can be trusted by those you work for. If trust is so important, then how does one go about winning it? The key simple point is that trust must be earned and deserved. Let's make no mistake about it. The key to being trusted is to be truly trustworthy. There are no tricks that will substitute for this fundamental truth. However, there are some things you can do to signal and be convincing about your trustworthiness. You can do something to give to other people the evidence on which they can base their decision on whether to trust you. You can give in order to get. In my book, The Trusted Advisor, my co-authors and I suggested that there were four main components to trust: credibility, reliability, intimacy — trust goes up with all three of those — and then one thing which reduces trust, and that is self-orientation. The four components have to do with the trustworthiness of words, actions, emotions, and motives. For example, credibility is about words. I can trust what he says about so-and-so. Reliability is about actions. I can trust her to do something or other. Intimacy is about emotions. I feel comfortable discussing this with that person. And then finally, self-orientation is about motives. I can trust that he cares about certain things. Most people, when asked to talk about trust, instinctively focus on credibility and reliability. My client or my boss knows that I'm credible and reliable, they say, so why doesn't he or she trust me? The answer is, of course, is that trust does have the multiple dimensions I've just outlined. I might trust your expertise, but distrust profoundly your motives. I might trust your brilliance, but dislike your style of dealing with me, your intimacy. Winning trust requires that you do well on all four dimensions, unless you're so superb at one or two of them that you can overcome some relative weakness in the others. Even then, you have to be truly superb, not just good. Credibility is the one aspect of trust that is most commonly achieved. Given the focus that most professionals give to their technical expertise and its relative tangibility, how easy it is to observe it, this is the factor most likely to be done well by you and by other people. Reliability is about whether people think you are dependable and can be trusted to behave in consistent ways. Judgments on reliability are strongly affected, if not determined, by the number of times the person has interacted with you. We tend to trust the people we know well and assign less trustworthiness to those with whom we have not yet interacted. If I've dealt with you 5 or 6 times in, say, 6 months, I have a better idea of what to expect from you than if I've known you for only a short while. Judgments about reliability can be borrowed by checking the experiences that other people have had with you. However, these recommendations are temporary estimates and can be quickly revised by your own direct experience. The most common failure in building trust is the third of the factors that I've listed: the lack of intimacy, the ability to relate to other people one-to-one, as person-to-person, instead of role-to-role. Some people consider it a positive virtue to maintain an emotional distance from others. They work hard at being detached. They think it's being businesslike. But that's a big mistake. Business can be, and usually is, intensely personal. There are obvious human emotions around such charged issues as promotions and compensation and recognitions and hirings and firings, reorganizations and other forms of decision-making. In fact, any project that gets done in business has somebody's emotions tied up with its relative success and failure. Now, by using the word intimacy, I don't mean that private lives necessarily get shared. I do mean that things personal, related to the issues at hand, get shared. It's possible to have an intimate relationship with people, in the sense that I mean it here, and not have anything to do with their life outside work. Intimacy is about emotional closeness about the issues at hand. Just as in forming friendships, establishing intimacy is playing a game of slowly but mutually increasing risk. One party offers a piece of himself or herself, and the other party either responds, deepening intimacy, or chooses not to respond, thereby drawing a line. Behaving appropriately requires knowing when to take a risk and knowing when a risk has been declined and how to behave in the face of that refusal. We should recognize that clumsy attempts to establish intimacy too soon could backfire. Perhaps it comes from a dinner invitation we put off with, "Yes, let's do that sometime," or a sharing of personal experiences that is more information than we want to know. The fear of committing this kind of gaffe, assuming more intimacy than is desired, is a very great fear for a great number of people. Intimacy is scary stuff. Of all the components of trust, it's the one that seems so easy to get so wrong. We like to believe we can control or influence credibility. We can demonstrate reliability. We can even get comfortable with keeping self-orientation low if we focus on the other person instead of ourselves. But intimacy? Now, that's another matter. It's the one that seems to have such high consequences if we get it wrong. We feel that we run the risk of being publicly exposed and personally vulnerable. Intimacy is more about who we are than any other aspect of trust. Creating intimacy is a dance, requiring some cautious stepping and some leaps of faith that bad things won't happen as one makes new, carefully selected moves. Creating intimacy requires courage. But not just for you, but for everyone. Chances are you've had at least some degree of success in forming intimate relationships at some time in your life. It's the same thing in the workplace. It's about connecting with people and viewing them as a person, not someone in a role. Let's turn to self-orientation. There's no greater source of distrust than people who appear to be more interested in themselves than they are in trying to be of service, in helping the boss, the team, their colleagues, or their clients. We must all work hard to show that our self-orientation is under control. The most egregious form of self-orientation is, of course, simple selfishness, being in it for the money. However, self-orientation is about much more than greed. It covers anything that keeps us focused on ourselves rather than on the other person in the relationship. The following list reveals how many threats there are to the focus on others and temptation for self-orientation. Number one, pure selfishness. Number two, self-consciousness. Too much worrying about how you're appearing to focus on what the other person is feeling. Number three, a need to appear on top of things and therefore always worrying about how you're coming across. Number four, a desire to look intelligent. Number five, a to-do list on our mind that's a mile long and again keeps you focused on you rather than the other person. A desire to jump to the answer. A desire to win that exceeds the desire to help. A desire to be right. A desire to be seen to be right. And all kinds of fears of various kinds. Fear of ignorance, of not having the right answer, of not appearing intelligent, or being rejected, and so on. All of these things keep us focused on ourselves rather than the other person we're dealing with. In short, any form of preoccupation with our own agenda is focusing on something other than the person will reduce trust directly. For example, I once had to hire a lawyer to probate a relative's will. The first few lawyers I spoke with tried to win my business by telling me when their firm was founded and how many offices they had and how much they would charge. None of this inspired much confidence. In fact, the more they talked about themselves and their firms, the less interested they appeared to be in me and my problems. I don't think these people were stupid, but I do think they misunderstood how human beings worked. They were so keen to convince me they were capable that they forgot to convince me that they were interested in me. Finally, I did encounter a lawyer who offered to send me a comprehensive outline of the steps involved, what I needed to rush to do, and what I should forget about for a while because it was not urgent. The outline also provided the phone numbers of all the government bodies I needed to notify, even though it had nothing to do with the legal work or the lawyer's fees. Now, all of this immensely helpful information was provided freely and for free before I had hired this lawyer. He was using it as a way to get hired. But naturally, he did indeed get the business. He had built confidence and trust by demonstrating that he knew what information was most relevant to me, even though some of it had nothing to do with the practice of estate law. He had earned trust by being generous with his ideas and his knowledge. He had proved that he was willing to earn my business. Trust can be earned by the simplest of gestures. I've got a dentist who, early in our relationship, recommended that I permit him to perform various advanced procedures on my teeth. Like many buyers, I didn't know whether he was recommending additional procedures because they were really needed. Was he being selfish, just trying to cross-sell? Or did I, in fact, really need this work to be done? My view of him was significantly affected by the fact that every time I went to his office, he always, and to this day still does, telephone me later that evening, without fail, to ask whether or not I'm in pain, whether a prescription is needed, whether the anesthetic has worn off. A little after the dinner hour, the phone rings, and it's Andrew, my dentist, saying, "How do you feel, David? Do you need any further help from me?" I never cease to be impressed by this. It only takes him a few seconds to make that call, but he's acting as if he cared. It's unusual behavior for a dentist, and as a result of it, I trust him. Now, at first, I was a little cynical. Did he care, or was he just acting as if he cared? Had he been to a dental marketing course or read a client relations book? I don't know. However, over time, when his small gestures continued and accumulated, I came to believe that he was sincere. Nowadays, I accept all of his recommendations. I trust him. The fact is that trust does not happen from one gesture nor without effort. Trust results from accumulated experiences over time. There's no one quick fix. At its core, trust is about relationships. I'll trust you if I believe that you're in this for the long haul, that you're not just trying to maximize the short-term benefits to you in each of our interactions. Trust is about reciprocity. You help me and I'll help you. But I need to know that I can rely on you to do your part and that our relationship is built upon shared values and principles. If I'm the client, then trusting you requires that I can believe that you will do what you say and that you'll say what you'll do, that your actions will match your words. And perhaps most critical of all, I will trust you if you exhibit some form of caring, if you provide some evidence that my interests are as important to you as your own interests are. I will trust you if I believe that you're in this for the long haul, that you're not just trying to maximize your own short-term benefits of our interactions. I need to know that I can rely on you to do your part and that our relationship is built on shared values and principles. Alas, values and principles are scarce in today's world, and the consequent decline of trust is all too visible. That this should be so is truly a paradox, since the more you are trusted by your clients, your boss, your colleagues and subordinates, the more you will get from them, and the more you will thrive professionally and personally. That concludes Earning Trust, the 9th episode in my podcast series on career development. It was based in part on my co-authored book, The Trusted Advisor. This podcast series is now available for purchase, both as a single episode and as part of a DVD set, from my website, davidmaister.com/store, STORE. I'm also pleased to announce that my forthcoming book, Strategy and the Fat Smoker, is available for pre-order from this same location.